It's time to unleash your inner cowboy with the Earn Your Spurs podcast. Now here's your host, Alyssa Barnes.
Hello and welcome to episode 48 of the Earn Your Spurs podcast. I'm your host, Alyssa Barnes. Now, if you're a regular listener of the Earn Your Spurs podcast, you know that I have been on a little bit of a hiatus for the last month. In the last episode, I mentioned that I was probably going to be cutting back a little bit, but I hadn't anticipated that it would be for quite this long. So I apologize that you've had to wait so long for the next episode to come out. I've had quite a few changes going on in my personal life. I took a new job and I moved 3 hours away from where I was living. So I'm still very much in Montana, but I am actually living on my family's property where I was born in the Bitterroot Valley, about 3.5 hours west of where I was living in the Madison Valley. And if my voice sounds a little bit raspy, we are just socked in with smoke from wildfires right now in Idaho and Washington. It's pretty nasty outside, so my voice is a little raspy. Since my move about a month ago, I have been without internet service. And I still don't have it, and I still don't know when I'm going to get it. So that has made recording the podcast and posting to the blog and all of those things just a little more challenging than they were before. So hopefully that little problem will be solved here in the next couple of weeks and I will be doing a major happy dance. Now on that note, I am going to be reducing the frequency of the podcast. I just can't quite keep up with the once a week schedule the way things are now. And honestly, I want to make sure that I am bringing the very best guests on the show that I can for you. And I don't want to feel like I'm just rushed to put out an episode every week and maybe not getting the very best people on. I feel like I've had some amazing people in the last year, but it is a struggle getting guests scheduled and getting them interviewed. And I want to make sure that I'm giving you the very best episodes that I possibly can. And it will help me a lot to be able to have a little bit more time to get them done. So I'm committing to doing one episode a month for sure, which you guys can count on. And then I'm hoping to sprinkle in some bonus episodes between the primary ones that will be coming out each month. So whenever I have kind of something interesting to share or a bonus episode, I will throw that in. And I would also love it if I could get a little bit of help from you guys. You may or may not have noticed that I have been asking on social media for you, my loyal listeners, to leave a voicemail on my SpeakPipe page about yourself. Tell me a little bit about your background, maybe a little bit about your story, or even just leave me a bumper. A bumper might sound something like, hey, this is John Smith, and I love to listen to the Earn Your Spurs podcast when I am cleaning stalls or when I'm loping my horse or when I'm driving to work in the city. But if you'd like to tell me a little bit more detail about yourself, I would love that. And you can call, leave me a voicemail, let me know a little bit about your background, what it is that you do with horses or what it is you would like to do, what you're aspiring to, why you enjoy listening to the podcast. And for those of you who are really brave, I would love it if you would leave a voicemail telling me a personal story about yourself, maybe something that's happened that you want to share with me and the audience. It's really simple to do if you go to speakpipe.com/EYSpurs. You can leave me a voicemail there. There's also a link on the website at earnyourspurs.com. The Earn Your Spurs podcast is coming up on its 1 year anniversary, and it has been an amazing year. I've met some wonderful people. I've had some of you reach out to me, which is just amazing. It's my favorite thing, my most favorite thing ever. And what I really want to do this next year is get you, my audience, more involved in the show. I want to know more about you. That's why I'm asking you to leave me a voicemail, letting me know about yourself, telling me a story. There's a podcast that NPR puts out called the StoryCorps podcast. And people can actually call in and leave a message telling their story, or they also do events around the country where people can actually record their story in a little recording booth that they have set up. So that's kind of the idea here. I want to share some of the stories of my listeners, whether you went on an amazing dude ranch vacation that you want to share, whether you have just a neat story to tell about working cows, or, you know, your dad who taught you everything that you know, or how you grew up in Philadelphia and came west and decided you wanted to be a cowboy. Whatever the case may be, I want to know your story. I want to know more about you. So please don't be shy. Go to speakpipe.com/EYSpurs or at earnyourspurs.com to click on the link and leave me a voicemail. I am so excited. I can't wait to hear from you. And on that note, I'm going to share a voicemail with you that I got just last week from Angelo Pecora in Sealy Lake, Montana. And he talks a little bit about himself and also the Montana Cowboy Poetry Gathering that just took place last week in Lewistown, Montana.
Hello, Alyssa. This is Angelo Pecora from Sealy Lake, Montana. I listen to your podcast whenever I can, or more importantly, when it applies to something that I, of course, am interested in. I'm an old, which is quite often, by the way, I'm an old saddle maker. I haven't made any saddles in 3 or 4 years. Now I'm mostly a holster and belt maker. I work at Paws Up Resort as a entertainer at the Chuck Wagon. I used to do a lot of packing in the hills. I'm a mule man, play the banjo. I just like all things Western. I'm heading out to the Montana Cowboy Poetry Gathering here starting Thursday of this month, and maybe I can give you a report on it, something maybe you or the listeners ought to take a look at. It's in Lewistown, Montana, and it starts Thursday, kicks off really Friday, Saturday, and Sunday with Cowboy Church. Anyway, hope to hear from you. So long.
So that's an example of what I am after. I want to know you guys better. I feel like I'm sitting here talking into the mic all the time, and some of you are amazing and reach out to me and I get to know you. And I know that there are lots of others who are listening in and have amazing stories to share. So I really, really want to hear from you. Now, after that very long introduction, I would just love to introduce you to my guest today. What I find so fascinating about this particular guest is that he grew up on Long Island, New York, in a family of people who trained hunter-jumpers. He rode English. And even though he grew up in that environment, he knew from a young age that he wanted to be a cowboy. And he didn't just sort of sit around and think about being a cowboy. He made a plan for how he was going to accomplish that. And he moved out west and he worked on several different ranches, and he learned everything that he could learn to earn his spurs, basically. And now he's a horseman. He's back in Long Island right now, riding hunter-jumpers again, ironically enough. And he's just a really neat person. So I think you're going to enjoy this interview. And without further ado, allow me to introduce you to my guest today, Cliff Shad Jr. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show today, Cliff. I'm really excited to have you here.
Well, thank you. I'm really excited to be here.
Well, you kind of stick out to me as a horseman because you have had some different experiences than most of the cowboys I know, you know, here in Montana. And so I'm really interested to talk to you about kind of your background and how you grew up and how you originally got into horses. So if you could just kind of tell us a little bit about yourself, that would be great.
I'd love to. And it's kind of a neat, varied story. It's a little bit different than a lot of people's stories.
Yeah.
I was born into a horse family. My mom and uncle are both trainers, but they're hunter-jumper trainers. And
oh, okay.
So I've rode a flat saddle, a hunter saddle, long before I ever sat in a Western saddle. And I was jumping ponies and big warm bloods as a little kid. But from the time I could walk, I wanted to be a cowboy when I grew up. And as I got older, nothing stood in my way. By the time I was a junior in high school, I was born on Eastern Long Island, out on the very end of the island. It was farm country where I grew up. A lot of horses, but it was all English. And when I was a junior in high school, I decided to homeschool my final 2 years of school, and I finished up as quick as I could, and I started going to apprentice at first for ranches, just really whoever would take a green kid from New York. I went all over the West that way at first, and I'd go out there maybe 6 months or so until I kind of went broke, and I'd come home and I'd ride horses for my family or ride horses on the East Coast, and then I'd end up back out there. And then by the time I was 20, I made the move full time to first Central Oregon. And ultimately, I ended up landing and kind of setting my roots in Montana.
It's a good place to set your roots.
It is. But I made some really big circles along the way. I buckarooed down in Nevada for a while and through Wyoming. I spent some time. I worked for, legendary horseman Craig Cameron. I spent quite a bit of time working for him at his place in Texas. And so I was really fortunate to be around some really good hands. And that was probably, if I were to take one thing from my experiences, it was surround yourself with people who are better than you and who are truly excellent at what they do. And when you feel like you're stretching yourself and you feel like you can't go on, that's how you know that you're really learning and you're really trying.
Yeah, that's good advice for anybody doing anything. Always surround yourself with people who are smarter than you.
Right.
So I'm really curious, like, what was it? Okay, you're surrounded by horses, obviously, but not Western horses.
Right.
What made you want to be a cowboy?
You know, gosh, that's a question I've been asked, and I still don't have a good answer for it. You know, no one in my family really had that desire. You know, for us, horses were kind of a business, and it was very classic hunter jumper. If anything, when I was a kid, my folks and my uncle kind of almost looked down on the Western at first.
Mm-hmm.
They've since really come around to it, but I don't know. I saw some movies as a kid and I started reading books about it, and it just appealed to me, and it was something in my heart. It was something that never, ever changed. I was the little kid that, even though nobody else did, I was a little kid wearing a hat and boots everywhere, relentlessly. I got beat up in school for it on a regular basis when I was a kid, and I didn't care. It never slowed me down. That was all I ever wanted.
I love that, because I think there's a lot of people who identify with that, but they don't maybe know the path to take to kind of get them there. And my dad has a similar story. So that's really cool.
It's, you know, they say that the roads that you have to, you know, try the hardest and persevere the most on are kind of the ones that take root the deepest. And that's what it was for me, is that, you know, it was hard when I first got to the West. You know, I was green, you know, I could ride a horse pretty well, but I didn't have any cow sense. I didn't know much about anything, you know, outside cowboying beside what I'd read and kind of studied. And, so, you know, I'd go to work for different outfits and I'd get cut the worst horse to ride. You know, there was a lot of hazing, especially when they heard where I was from. And, you know, it was good though. It made a man of me. It really taught me how to really work hard and keep my mouth shut and try to learn. It was humbling, and there were days that I wanted to quit, but I kept with it.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of the definition of what it is to be a cowboy, right?
Yes, ma'am.
So did you feel like you had to leave the East Coast in order to do what you wanted to do? Was there just not any opportunity to kind of be a cowboy there?
You know, one of the opportunities, and I'm forever grateful for it, was the opportunity I had. I spent some time around Deep Hollow Ranch, which is, believe it or not, it's the oldest continually run cattle ranch in the U.S. It's had cows on it since 1610, and it's on the very end of Long Island. It sits right out on Montauk Point.
Oh, wow.
And that was about the most cowboy experience I ever had, being in New York as a kid. And it was a run like a real cow outfit. I learned a lot about just about the lifestyle there. And that was it, really the only preparation I had for going out west. But, you know, the biggest thing for me was I knew it was imperative for me to get off of Long Island. And because, again, I wanted to surround myself with the best of the best. I knew that even at that point, that I wanted to get around people that were not just really good at what they were doing, but that were masters of the craft. I wanted to get around the good California style bridle horsemen. I wanted to get around the buckaroos and really develop that end of it. You know, I didn't want to just be somebody that wore a hat and boots, but didn't earn it. You know, to me, it was all about, as the name of your program, I wanted to earn my spurs. That was important to me.
So, how did you get people to take a chance on you? I mean, I know it's hard when you don't have that background. Obviously, you knew how to ride a horse, but as far as like going and getting a job on a ranch somewhere, how did you get somebody to give you a job?
Well, luckily, good help is hard to find. And so a lot of ranchers were willing to settle for okay help or just a lot of try. You know, I had a lot of try. I was willing to work for next to nothing at first. I just kind of put myself out there. I've had good people skills most of my life. And so I was able to talk to people and explain my situation and what I was trying to do. And, you know, just there were some really great guys that took a chance on me, and they taught me, and I wanted it bad enough that I learned fast. And, you know, it really came together for me after a short amount of time.
Were you strategic about where you wanted to work?
I knew that I wanted to really start out in the Northwest. The buckaroo culture, the vaquero culture, that appealed to me before I ever even went out there. Probably just because I read some great books about it, and that's what really reeled me in and hooked me. I love the concept of developing a horse in time. And, you know, my heart has always been for young horses, and I really like the style of, you know, that style of starting the young horse that really appealed to me. And that's what drew me to Oregon and then Nevada and like I said, on through Wyoming and Montana. You know, that was just, I just went to places that were rich in that kind of history.
Yeah, I'm sure you got exposed to a lot of different things in the process.
I did.
So did you know from the get-go, like, what your ultimate goal was? Did you, because you're a horse trainer and a clinician right now, is that right?
Yes, absolutely. And it's funny, primarily now I'm doing more with hunters and jumpers than probably any other style. It's really come full circle. And I kind of cussed my background with English horses as a kid, and now it's really come to be so valuable to me to be able to kind of stand between both worlds. I guess I'm equally at home in a Wade Tree saddle as I am in a hunter saddle, and that's pretty valuable.
Yeah, absolutely. And when you first started out, did you sort of have an end goal in mind of what you wanted to do? Or did you think you might want to be a cowboy, or did you think you wanted to train horses, or did you know at that point?
I think that I needed to get the desire to just cowboy and be a gypsy and ramble around and be a little bit wild and reckless and and all of that. I needed to flush that from my system before I could really focus on the training aspect of it, because I think that there's a lot of guys out there that are cowboys and they're artists and they're brilliant at what they do. But there's also a lot of guys out there that they cowboy, but it's for them, it's just a job and it's not really an art. And, you know, for me, my love has always been in really developing and making horses. If I ever got in trouble for anything when I was working for ranches, it was because I was busy tuning on my horse while I maybe should have been holding Rodier better, or, you know, whatever we were doing at that moment.
Yeah.
So, you know, sometimes, you know, I worked for, you know, a few different places. It was more of a get the job done attitude. And I was taking my time to make my horses, and, you know, that kind of started butt heads. But for me, it's always been about the horse.
Yeah, I can relate to that a little bit, because growing up as a horse trainer's kid, you know, that's what you do. You're always working on your horses because that's what you've been taught. And I remember getting in trouble a few times when I was supposed to be doing other stuff.
So. Yeah, you know, I'd be building to a cow or something to turn one, and
yeah,
you know, my horse would drop his shoulder, and I'd start picking up shoulder and rib cage and shaping them back up, and you know, they'd be cussing me because I lost a cow by that point.
Right. So, what would you say are the main differences between like the horse industry in New York and on the East Coast versus out West?
The main differences. Well, I think that the attitude of the people in the Northeast, you know, there's really no outside riding for horses here. As far as you can't take a young horse, you know, a lot of these guys that are making up your charity horses and stuff, there's still quite a few that get those horses out and they season them in the hills and then they take them to town. You know, they spend a lot of time outside, even if it's just part of their program. And there's really none of that here. You know, I find in the West that horses are kind of, they're kicked out. They're not messed with a lot when they're young.
Mm-hmm.
They're brought in, they're started, and it's kind of just, that's tradition. That's how it's been done a long time. Whereas here on the East Coast, tradition says that if you're going to be competitive and you're going to show, you need to be with a trainer like all the time. You need to have your horse with a trainer. You need to have a professional ride your horse on a regular basis. So, I have to say it's really conducive to being a trainer here, because the amount of business a guy can get, especially bringing the, you know, my foundation of Western or let's say kind of a vaquero foundation, and bringing that to this world is just, you know, it's pretty awesome. And, you know, having that on the West Coast, you know, there's so many people that have that foundation already. So it's a lot harder, I think, to be competitive there. And it's a lot harder to really define yourself. And I think for me, it was the opportunity to kind of serve an industry that doesn't get this kind of, it doesn't get this kind of foundation. You know, a lot of these English horses, they're started in a stall. They get on them, they lead them around a little bit, and they turn them loose. And those horses are heavy. They're rude. They're pushy. They're, you know, they have a lot of issues.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw that need, and that's kind of what I went for. And that's the difference I see, is that people tend to make a lot more of a pet of their horse here.
Mm.
You know, they're really strict about getting them to go good in the arena when they're working. They really are kind of diligent with their horses. But then again, you get on the ground around them and those horses are dragging these little ladies around. And, you know, so there's definitely a need for this type of foundation that I can offer them. And that's really the big difference I see. You know, I mean, aside from the discipline difference, which is very different.
Right. Aside from the ranch that you mentioned earlier on Long Island, are there any Western riding opportunities out there, or is it pretty limited?
You know, there are. There's actually, even right there on Long Island where I'm at, there's a few barns. There's one that stands out in particular, a great friend of mine owns, and Indian Head Ranch, Wayne Dougal. And Wayne's got some of the best cow horses on the East Coast in his barn right there. It's a little small place on a main road. And believe it or not, there stands about 100 horses on the place on less than 10 acres.
Wow.
He does a great job though. They are very competitive in everything from rain cow horse to sorting, penning, and most of your cow events, I guess you could say. And he's got some extremely good horses over there. And he was a big influence on me growing up, and he still is to this day. And so there is that opportunity. If you want to work cows, if you want to be a cutter, if you want to be ride rain cow horses, it's here. It's alive and well. I mean, this summer alone, I could have shown in the Ranch Versatility every single weekend within 250 miles of where I live, which isn't very bad. You know, you could go show every weekend. So it's there, you know, but it's very diverse too. There's a little bit of everything.
Yeah. I think kind of the notion is that on the East Coast, there aren't any opportunities for Western riding. And I know, you know, I've kind of visited with some people that follow my blog and listen to the podcast and stuff who feel like they're in a place where they can't do those sorts of things. And so I like to kind of look for those opportunities, because I feel like they're, in some cases, they are there, but people just don't know about them.
people don't know. It's just, it's not noted for it. But I think it's getting bigger. You know, there's some extremely talented reining horse trainers. There's some extremely talented, you know, cow horse trainers, and they're hiding out in places like New Jersey and Pennsylvania and upstate New York, Massachusetts. And there's a lot of talent there. And, mm-hmm. you know, I think a lot of these guys are cowboys from the West that learned how to diversify, and they're not afraid. You know, they might be riding a bunch of reiners on a regular basis, but they're not afraid to take in a warm blood to start, or they're not afraid to work with a Frisian or any of these other horses.
Right.
You know, they know that in this part of the country, you have to diversify. Unless you're going to do just the jumpers or just the hunters, you really have to diversify and be willing to kind of handle a lot of different types of horses. In an average day for me, I might start my day with three or four jumpers. I might ride two dressage horses and finish out with a few reiners in the afternoon. And for someone like me, that's a little bit ADD anyway. That's great. I love it. I never get bored.
Works for you.
It does.
So as far as like rodeo, is there much of that out there?
There is. Cowtown, New Jersey. Every single weekend from, I think, Memorial Day through Labor Day, they have a rodeo there at Cowtown, New Jersey. It's a PRCA show. And there's a lot of guys that come from all over the West, and they camp out right there. You know, they camp out there and they rodeo there all summer. You know, had a good friend. He came from Nevada and he camped out at Cowtown last year. He rodeoed all throughout the Northeast on the First Frontier Circuit, and he won the circuit finals here last year. Jace Angus, a great cowboy.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of guys that are willing to think, if you're willing to think outside the box, the East Coast really has a lot to offer.
Yeah, that's really neat because, you know, like I said, I don't think people are aware of all the opportunities out there. So it's nice to talk to someone on the inside.
Yes. Thank you.
How are you kind of splitting your time now? Are you still spending time out here in Montana? Or are you kind of stationed in Long Island now, or what's up with you?
You know, my heart is, it's always going to be Montana. There's, you know, if there's anything in my life that has a hold on me, it's the great state of Montana. It just calls to me. But, you know, unfortunately right now, you know, things are so busy here and it's really hard to get away. I mean, as it is, as we speak, I'm on the road right now coming back from riding in Pennsylvania, just outside Philadelphia, and I got to be back to ride a pile of them tomorrow. And so it's really hard when you're this busy to be able to get out there and take a breather and slow down. Although I did get out there, I was able to go out and get in the ranch bronc riding at the Will James Roundup this year again, and it was always nice to be back there and see friends. So that was a highlight of my summer.
Well, I'm sure it's just really different going between the two places.
It really is. And it's a culture shock on either end.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Yeah.
I mean, as far as just like the culture in general, what are kind of the differences that are notable for you?
Well, you know, I think it's huge. I mean, that is probably the biggest question you've asked me thus far, because the culture is just, it's wildly different. You know, the culture of the West is really, you know, as cliche as it sounds, you know, I guess there is a code of the West to some extent. And really the thing I learned the most there is that, you know, people don't really care what you say you can do. They care what you show you can do. You know, people look at how much heart or how much try you have. They're not worried about what saddle you're riding so much. They're not quite as judgmental, and it's more about just how hard you try and how much of yourself you're willing to put into your job.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the East Coast, you know, there's stereotypes that exist here, and I'm not going to say that they're 100% wrong, because I'd be a liar, because it is a very competitive world. It is a very big business, I think, breeds shallow behavior. And so there is a lot of shallow behavior here, but there's also some really great people that are working really hard to bring Western traditions here, to keep them alive.
Hmm.
You know, I ride for a pair of fellows that just great guys. They've been best friends for a lot of years, and they started up. Really, it's more of an idea than anything that turned into a bit of a brand, but it's called Lost Cowboy, and it's really neat to be able to be a part of that, to help bring their movement, what they're trying to do as far as cowboy ethics and the Western mentality, and bring that to the East. And, you know, it's been an exciting trip to be able to be a part of that. They've really made their actions speak louder than even their words. And that's something that is, you know, that's as Western as it gets, you know, just don't talk about it, just do it. And, right. And that's what they've really done with what they're doing here. And so not only am I training horses here, but I'm trying to create a shift in people's thinking, not just about how they're training their horses and handling their horses, but about working on themselves. The only true change that you get in horses is when you're willing to change yourself. And, you know, I used to be closed-minded and think, well, that's just horse training. But I've come to learn through my own personal growth that when we try to change who we are, even if it's a struggle, even if it's day by day, and sometimes you get dragged backwards, as long as you keep having that forward motion, you keep going forward and trying to do the right thing, you know, in the long run, change occurs. It happens. Even on the toughest of horses, it happens. And even on the most hard-headed of people, change will occur. And so that's what my friends Scott and Kevin at Lost Cowboy are trying to do. And I've been so blessed to be a part of that and really, you know, grow with that.
That's awesome. I love that. And I really need to meet them.
Absolutely.
What are you doing for them?
You know, it's a lot of things. They own several horses. I've been really blessed and really lucky to become their trainer, but I don't even feel like their trainer. It's more like they're my friends that I go to ride with weekly. They have some great horses. They've got a really cool gelding right now that's by Steady Tradition that I've been riding and showing, and he's just a really nice horse. He'd be competitive anywhere, and that's really nice. You know, it's great to ride these warm bloods every day, but it's really nice to go ride the horses that these guys have. You know, both of them are family men. Their kids are involved in the horses, so it's really a big family deal. You know, it's really nice. You know, they've sponsored, when I did a Mustang makeover, they were my sponsors for that. They've given me unending support in every venture that I go through with horses here. They also sponsor several rough stock riders that are riding PRCA. And so in helping them, I try to get the word out about what they're doing, because it's something I truly believe in. And in return, they've just been totally supportive of what I'm doing.
I've seen a lot of their stuff online and on Facebook and whatnot, and I think it's great too.
They're great guys. If you ever get a chance, you ought to visit with them.
So tell me, if somebody lives kind of on the East Coast or anywhere really that is less than, you know, Western as far as like by Montana standards, do you have any advice for somebody who, you know, kind of maybe is a little bit like you and that they sort of relate to the whole cowboy lifestyle and they'd really like to get into it and they're not really sure where to go with that?
You know, my advice, and it's actually really neat. I've had several kids that are younger than me come to me with these questions from the East. And, you know, it's been really, that's probably been the best thing for me. The most rewarding thing is, you know, for example, there's a fella, I'm so proud to call him a friend now. You know, he started out at 8 years old. He took some riding lessons with me and we've stayed in touch over the years. And now he's about 20 years old and he's working on a ranch in, Grass Range, Montana now. Mm. And he grew up on Eastern Long Island also. And he's made one heck of a hand. And to see that is worth more than anything that I will ever accomplish, to see him be able to go there and be successful, because I helped to pave the way for him. I helped to open doors and helped to get him out there when he was 15, 16 to stay with me for the summers and work and stuff. You know, that's brilliant. And so my advice to anybody young or old that wants to do it is, you know, good things in life come to those that take action. Mm-hmm. You know, it's this theme just keeps coming up in this, in our talk here, but it's really true. It's perseverance pays off. If you want it bad enough, go after it. And my advice to them is, you know, I didn't have the luxury of the internet. I didn't get to research who I was going to work on. I couldn't Google employers. I couldn't look up ranches where I might want to go. I really was throwing darts at a map and just showing up places and going to the local feed store or bar and asking for jobs. And that's how I got jobs at that point.
Mm-hmm.
Thankfully now it's a lot different. So I recommend anybody that wants to do it, you know, reach out on Facebook, reach out in social media, find places that are hiring. If you're young and you want to get and start out in the West, a great place to cut your teeth and learn a little something is on some of the better guest ranches. Mm-hmm. That's a real, you know, that's a great opportunity. Like it or not, as much as many cowboys will never want to admit it, like it or not, pretty much every cowboy at some time or other ends up dealing with dudes, you know, ends up part of the dude ranching or the agricultural tourism part of things. It just happens. So, mm-hmm. you know, there's no shame in it, and it's a great learning opportunity. So I recommend that people start there. It gets you out there and it gives you an opportunity to start to visit neighboring ranches and maybe get to some brandings and doing some things like that where, you know, you can grow and learn.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. And I say that a lot too, because it's a little easier to get your foot in the door. And once you do, you know, there's a lot of other opportunities that can come along with it.
Yes, you're absolutely right.
And there's nothing wrong with catering to those people who have the desire to live that cowboy life, even if it's for a week in the summer. It's all good.
Absolutely. Truly, I think it's a priceless gift to be able to see groups of people come and see for the first time, and you be able to see through their eyes what they feel and what they think when they see you gathering horses or when they go out to help move cows and things like that. And you're taking day-to-day chores and you have people along that are just so enthralled. They're just so in love and it's so romanticized for them. And that's awesome. I mean, that's so flattering, you know?
Yeah.
It's a wonderful thing. I think, you know, dude ranches are doing their part to keep the legacy and tradition of cowboys alive. You know,
yeah.
People can tease about them all they want, but they are really so important. They're integral, I think, to the education and growth of, you know, cowboy culture in the U.S.
I agree. And one of my recent podcast guests owns a dude ranch in Northern Colorado. And I don't know if you happened to hear that one or not, but he was amazing. And he ended up buying the ranch after he went there a couple of times. And now he owns a ranch and it's a working ranch and a dude ranch. And had he not ever been a guest there, he probably wouldn't have ever bought it and would be living the life that he is now. So, yeah, I think they're just amazing.
Yeah, they really are. I was really lucky. I spent quite a bit of time working for and eventually co-managing the guest program for the Lazy EL Ranch, which at one point it ended up being one of the top 10 dude ranches in the nation. And, you know, we ran on 20,000 acres in the Beartooths, and it was one of the best ranch experiences I ever had.
That sounds awesome. So this has been really great, Cliff. I'm so glad that we could get together and chat, because I just feel like you've really taught me a lot. And, you know, this is a topic I've wanted to talk about for a while. And so I'm really glad that we could do this. And is there a good place for the listeners to look you up online?
Honestly, I have never been great at self-promotion. I've really never had to advertise what I do. So I don't have a fancy website, but, the best way to connect with me would be Cliff Shad Jr. on Facebook.
Okay.
Look, you know, I also have a page on there, Common Thread Horsemanship. It talks a little bit about what I do, and you can kind of get a good feel. I'm very active on there, so you can get a good feel for who I am and what I offer through that.
Well, I'll put a link to that in the show notes on the website when this episode gets published, so people can check you out. And are you doing any clinics now?
You know, the lately, I've been doing quite a few private clinics at some really neat farms everywhere from Florida to Massachusetts. I am trying to have a few upcoming ones in late September, early October, and the dates are going to be announced on Facebook probably within the next week.
Okay, cool. That would be a nice way for people to meet up with you if they happen to be near where you're going to be.
It would be great.
So I just have one final question for you. What do you think is the most important quality for any good cowboy to have?
Heart or try. You know, they're one and the same, but I don't think there's anything more important, because if you have heart and you have try, then you also have grit. You have determination. I think along with that, you know, are all the other qualities kind of built into that word right there. Just try. Having try. It means that you have determination. You have integrity about following through and getting it done. To me, that sums it all up.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, that's important to have with anything, but especially if you want to be a cowboy, that's what's going to make other people take you seriously too.
That's right.
So awesome. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with me today. I really appreciate it. I'm so glad that we could do this.
I really appreciate that you had me on here today, and I've always been a fan of the program, so it's really neat to be a part of it.
Well, thank you, Cliff.
Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed that interview with Cliff Shad Jr. I'm really, really excited that I was able to connect with him. I just think he's such a neat guy. Now, before we wrap up, I just want to remind you to go to speakpipe.com/EYSPURS. Leave me a voicemail or click on the link at earnyourspurs.com. Leave me a voicemail, leave me a bumper, leave me a little 2-minute clip about yourself, or tell me a story. Think of it as like the Earn Your Spurs open mic. And secondly, if you haven't done so already, please go into iTunes or Stitcher or whatever app it is that you are using to listen on your device and subscribe to the podcast. And that's really important because, yes, I'm going to be putting out a monthly episode, but there will be additional episodes thrown in there, and I don't want you to miss them, especially if you happen to leave me a voicemail telling your story and I decide to play it. I really don't want you to miss that. So two things, speakpipe.com/EYSPURS and subscribe in iTunes. You guys, thank you so much for sticking with me. I really appreciate it. I apologize for the hiatus. We are back, and I'm going to have some great guests coming up in the very near future. So be looking forward to that. As always, I appreciate you so, so much for listening. Thank you for being here. And I will see you on the next episode of the Earn Your Spurs podcast.
Thanks for listening to the Earn Your Spurs podcast. Until next time, happy trails and spur on.